Playlist one, here we go. 1, 2, 3.
So here's what I'm saying about Michael.
Yeah.
I watch his stuff on Facebook all the time when he's playing at his open mic stuff.
We should go on a Saturday night.
We should go. And maybe get afford a haircut, because I don't know what the hell's going on with the hair in there.
Good morning to my favorite people in the world, the WGN radio listeners. Thank you so much to Pete McMurray for just, you know, being one of the best guys out there on here in this crazy planet of ours. Thank you for tuning in and spreading the good word. This is Mike Heidemann in for the one and only Nick DiGilio on this humid, humid October night. Yes, my hair, it looks like a wig right now. I feel like it's getting very puffy each and every second that time goes by, and you know what? I don't care. Thank you, leave-in conditioner, I suppose. Hey, but happy Friday, everybody. Nick is sick tonight, so the wonderful management here at WGN, Mary Boyle, has asked me to keep the mic warm as we move into the weekend. And just, you know, if you've heard my voice before, if you haven't, I'm the producer for the WGN Nightside Show here at the station from 10 p.m. until 1 a.m., as well as the host of the music podcast Sound Sessions, which can be found on Apple, Alexa, SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever else you find your podcasts. It's so great to be with you all tonight, and if you want to join our convo, you know the number to dial in or to text in, 312-981-7200. Again, 312-981-7200. I'd love to hear from all of you. Huge show tonight, but first I need to say hi to my man behind the glass, Mr. Tom Hush. What's going on, Tom?
Hey, Mike. How's it going, man?
It is great to see you. It's great to be behind the mic at this time. We haven't worked together for a minute or so, and it's good to see you, man.
Yeah, it's rare. Usually we see each other crossing over. You know, I'm over here in this studio, you're in the other studio, but not like this. It's been a while since we've done something like this.
Yeah, we've been like, now we're taking it like Moses and parting that Red Sea and bringing us both together from the studio points that, because you are on the far side studio here at Nick's studio with Studio D, and I'm in Studio A at the very other side, and it's good that we are, you know, joined together, I suppose.
Yeah, it's going to be biblical.
So we also have Vic Vaughn in the newsroom and Dan Long making sure that we stay on the air, which is very important here at the station. It's going to be a great night, though. I cannot believe it's Friday, and even more so, I can't believe it's the middle of October, October 11th. Tom, are you ready for Halloween? Is that kind of your thing? Are you excited for these kind of holidays?
Halloween is my single favorite holiday of the year. It's the best. I love getting dressed up. I love going to parties, decorating, getting the candy out, all that good stuff, and especially watching a ton of horror movies.
Yeah, I've been listening to Nick DiGilio's show, and I hear all your horror movie picks, and I'd like to see how you're kind of going through a process here with your movies. You're picking them very intentionally.
Yeah. I like to plan it out, because watching a movie a day is not just an idle thing. You got to really, really care about what you're doing. You're setting aside about 2 hours a day to just sit there and entertain yourself. So I made myself a whole schedule. Right now, we're wrapping up Zombie Week, so that's been a lot of fun.
Wow. So what I catch little bits and pieces, because usually when you're doing the show, I'm doing the podcast here at the station and uploading those. What zombie movies have you tackled this week?
So I had to start out with the Romero stuff, the grandfather of all zombie movies. He created the zombie as we know it today. So start out with the Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, all those classics. Didn't stay away from it, the latter stuff that he did. I'm not as huge of a fan of that, but those original three have been great. I also went over to Lucio Fulci's just titled Zombie here in the United States, but abroad is titled Zombie 2, because technically this zombie movie that he made is the Italian sequel to Dawn of the Dead, which was titled just Zombie when released in Europe. So it's kind of got a weird history as a pseudo sequel to Dawn of the Dead, not officially in any way, really. Totally different cast of characters, totally different director and everything. Romero was not involved at all, but I watched that one. And then, of course, the spectacular 2004 zombie comedy, Shaun of the Dead, which I think is one of not only one of the best horror movies of the 2000s, but one of the best comedies comedies of the 2000s. Every time I've been watching it for like 15 years now, and it still makes me laugh. It still is intensely sharp and a great love letter to the zombie genre. So not sure where I'm going to wrap it up here today. I've got, I think, you know, I might have to go with,
this is important.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think what was originally on my schedule was, I'm going to go for a double feature today.
Mm.
I'm going to go for Return of the Living Dead, parts 1 and 2.
Okay, you're going very vintage movies, by the way, Tom. You're not really diving into the 2000s with these movies. You know, 28 Days Later.
I'll get to that. But they, as Nick and I have talked about before, and he and I disagree on this, he does not consider 28 Days Later a zombie movie.
Isn't the whole movie about zombies taking over? Like, that's the whole process behind it, right?
Well, that's the thing, is that technically speaking, with 28 Days Later, they're infected. They are zombies.
Okay.
They do not die and come back to life. They are infected by a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Does it use all the same kind of tropes of the zombie genre? Is it basically a zombie movie? In my opinion, yes. But because not only are they not the returned dead, they are infected and fast. They're fast zombies.
Yeah, that was the whole draw to the movie franchise.
Exactly. Nick does not consider them to be true zombie movies. So,
well, I'm not going to argue with Nick. His mind is cavernous. It's incredible to see his encyclopedic knowledge of these movies. I love it because you guys go back and forth with so much wisdom with these movies, and I'm over here like, I thought the movie with Sandra Bullock with the birds was a zombie movie.
Bird Box.
I wrote Bird Cage on my paper, but that's a movie with Robin Williams, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. Robin Williams and Gene Hackman.
No zombies at all in that movie.
No, just people having a good old fashioned time in Miami, I think, is where that one.
So have you been giving some listeners responses? Have they been calling in and texting and saying what movies you should watch, or giving you some opinions of theirs?
I think they're just going on their own journey. I mean, the other day we did kind of a beginner's guide to horror. We had a listener text in saying, you know, I don't watch a lot of horror movies. Me and the wife don't really go down that road, but we want to try it. Especially they mentioned that their kids are out of the house now. It's just them. They don't have to worry about scaring anybody too much, but they wanted an intro to something that's not quite so horrifying. So Nick and I talked a little bit about that. And there's a lot of picks on that list that we talked about that I would watch this month as well. Stuff like Poltergeist, which is a classic. Nick is not a huge fan, but I like Poltergeist, directed by the great Tobe Hooper, who's better known probably for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And of course, that when he did that TV series, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, was one of the greatest with Mark Curry. Oh, wait.
I don't believe so.
Shoot. This is Birdcage all over again.
Oh, bird.
Well, call in, text in with your movie suggestions, because I want to learn a little bit more about the horror franchises. Well, I find it so fascinating to see why we're drawn to these kind of movies, which are, to be honest, it's a little bit taboo and obscure to be into a movie about, you know, people getting chased by zombies or a serial killer on the loose. But I love the fanfare of it all. I'd love to just find out what part of our mind is just so intrigued by that. And Tom brought up a very cool topic that we're going to be diving into in the show, probably around 2:30. We're going to look at the 10 essential horror movie scores. Yes, I'm a music guy. I love all things music. Have the Sound Sessions podcast. So we thought we'd dive into like a top 10 list or top 5 list of the essential horror movie scores. And what is it about, you know, the Scream, the Red Right Hand song, or perhaps, you know, the ring, ring, ring from Psycho and everything that makes us so scared? Because if you think about it, is there anything less scary than a guy in a tuxedo with a violin screeching it like in a soundstage? Yeah, that's not really the most scary thing in the entire world, right? I mean, what is it about these sounds that really draws us to these horror movie scores? And Tom got a list here for us, and I'm going to have to go to him because he's our resident expert on these. Ooh, we got some good ones. I'm looking at the list a little bit ahead. But call in, text in with your thoughts. What is the best horror movie score? What's the best song or idea, or maybe even like a little chirpy sound effect that really, really scared you when you were a kid? Could it be my cell phone getting a text message? Who knows? Could it be that ring in a quiet phone? Or maybe like it could be something as easy as leaves crackling or brushing against your window or something like that. So call in, text in 312-981-7200, and we will be right back. Michael Heidemann in for Nick DiGilio here on WGN Radio. I'm listening to this. This does not scare me at all. What is this from?
What?
Spooky Hollow?
This is from 1985's Reanimator, directed by Stuart Gordon.
Reanimator.
Yes, based on the classic H.P. Lovecraft story, Herbert West, Reanimator.
Ah, Pixar's first film, right? No? Okay.
No.
So we were talking about the greatest horror movies and horror scores in the entire world. It's a really interesting thing, learning about music and learning about the things that make us tick inside. And I'm looking at this article right now, and they make a really great connection. With the exception of musicals, no film genre capitalizes more on music than horror. It's the lifeblood of any scare, whether it's a cacophony of strings, the eerie piano scale, or the deafening bout of silence. It's just so, so scary to sit in a movie. And I've seen these YouTube videos where they take out the scores from these horror films and show how unfrightening they are without the little heartbeats that go on, or maybe the short bristles of the wind, or the billowing of the cello that you can hear in a lot of films. And it just shows how important it is. We're getting a lot of great text messages. Again, we're talking about the top scores in any horror movie. And we got one from Taxi Driver Bob. Is he the one who wrote The Shining? Because that had a great score.
Taxi Driver Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
I'm looking at this. It's so funny because on our text screen, we can see these GIFs. And it's just a GIF of Jack Nicholson just nodding very creepily. And it's actually kind of scaring me. So even the GIFs that you see are kind of scary every once in a while. The theme song from The Exorcist from the 641 always freaked me out. That was a good one. That was because it had a little bit of melody, but it was just a little bit too frightening because you knew what was next. And that movie was probably one of the first horror movies that I ever saw in my life. I mean, I remember I went to a Catholic school growing up in Woodstock, Illinois, Marion Central, and they didn't allow us to see that movie. Like, it was kind of barred.
Totally taboo.
Bit. It yeah. was. I mean, just sitting there with a priest and the spinning of the head and the swears. And it wasn't until I was like 15 that I actually saw it. And I was like, oh, yeah. This movie is terrifying. I'm glad I didn't see that when I was young. What were your first thoughts?
I mean, my first thoughts for The Exorcist was, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. I also, you know, I didn't go to Catholic school, but I was brought up Catholic. And, you know, when you have that upbringing, it makes those sort of things seem a little bit too real. You know, when that's the thing that you're brought up as a kid, that's what it's tapping into, is your fear of the devil and the fear of demons. And a lot of people really thought it was terrifying when it first came out in 1973. There were people that legitimately believed that there was evil in the film, like in the actual film that they were shown, that they would project, that there was something evil about it. People would pass out, people were just not able to handle it. There was a sudden spike of interest in exorcisms, which was a practice that had essentially gone its course. It was not super common for that sort of thing to happen. And then all of a sudden, specifically, I believe, Jesuit priests, which are an order of priests that are well known for exorcisms, they started getting calls left and right. They said, I need an exorcism. I need an exorcism. This needs to happen. Mm-hmm. All because that movie came out. And seeing it as a kid really tapped into a lot of those fears of, you know, possession and not being in control of one's own body. But it's also a very depressing story about family and regret and these sorts of things. As I'm sure you remember from the plot, one of the main priests, Father Karras, has this very strained relationship with his mother. He feels that he's not taking care of her very well and has been a bad son. And of course, the demon, Pazuzu, as he's later named in The Exorcist 2, kind of hones in on that and hones in on your greatest, deepest, fears and things that really, really bother you. So That, in addition to the horror happening to a child, is really, I think, what gets people freaked out with that movie. It's still considered one of the scariest movies ever made, and I would have to agree with that. And it's got a great score,
yeah,
an amazing score. A lot of people can, you know, have a little bit of confusion as to the origins of the Exorcist theme, as it's commonly known.
Mm-hmm.
The Exorcist theme, as many people think of it, is actually part of a very long album called Tubular Bells by Mike Oldfield. That mm-hmm. Came out of Britain, and it was a very popular album, super popular album. In fact, the first album ever released on Virgin Records.
Wow. Very interesting.
It's
very, very cool. Do you have a clip of that by chance? Or maybe
I can get a little bit of that. But Mike Oldfield has a really weird story. You know, He totally did not know that this was going to be used in a horror film. You know, he didn't have any ideas about where it was going to go. And he's very much known as a perfectionist. He's remounted Tubular Bells as like a stage thing, mm-hmm. and re-released it many times. So it's kind of this weird obsession, and it almost fits the story of The Exorcist a little bit. Let's take a listen.
Yeah, it's all coming back to me now. The first few times that I heard this, it's very, you know, I don't think that it would really stand the test of time as like a disco hit, but I think that it's still a little bit frightening. And a lot of the soundtracks back during this time when they were putting out these movies kind of use this as a base. It's the same kind of thing with Poltergeist. I mean, they kind of has that same kind of similar feel where it's a little bit. Oh no, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Halloween.
Yes,
Halloween. It has that similar feel.
If I'm not mistaken, they're both in the same time signature, which is 5/4. And so having it be in an odd time signature, I think, really taps into something weird in people's brains. You know, when you're composing music, as a musician yourself,
mm-hmm.
Composing music can have a great effect on the way people think of a song. If something's in 4/4 major key, it makes you feel happy.
Yeah.
If something is maybe in an odd time signature, maybe like something crazy like 5/4, 7/8.
Yeah, things. That's crescendos are very important when you're trying to make a point with your music, and that's what a lot of these great, great thematic soundtracks do. We're getting a lot of amazing texts. Again, 312-981-7200 from the 779. I like Puppet Master. Oof, that's a good one.
Puppet Master is a very strange franchise. That I think there's like 10 of those movies. It's a very specific pick, and I gotta give them kudos for that. Puppet Master.
How about this classic one from the 312 Jaws theme when the shark attacks? Now that.
Yeah.
That, top 10. You got to go for the Jaws. The dun-nut, dun-nut.
The two most popular two most popular notes in horror, F and F sharp.
Yeah, and to be honest, used in a lot of Metallica songs as well, which is also some scary music when you get down to it. From the 773, thank you so much. So GIF is actually pronounced GIF, as they're saying. GIF, not GIF, like a GIF is a peanut butter, I suppose.
I mean, that's the scariest thing of all.
I'm terrified by GIF peanut butter. Come on, I'm a Skippy man myself. From the 816, Tubular Bells also received a 1974 Grammy for Best Instrumental Composition. And rightfully so, because if you create a song that has that much of an impact on people's lives, if you create emotion just from the scales you're creating with a band or your instrument, that is exactly what music is. That's why it cuts down to those heart chords. It's just a matter of what you feel and what you're going through. And I loved your walk down with The Exorcist, because it's so interesting to see the different layers, and it all comes from connecting with family in these horror movies. And I just love it the way that you lay it out and then explain how music just has that great impact. Again, we're taking the best horror movie scores up until the 2:30. We might bring it along and look at this list after that. But right now we're going to take another quick break. Again, 312-981-7200. This is Michael Heidemann in for Nick DiGilio on WGN Radio. Get out of the water! Don't do it. Welcome back, everybody, to WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Nick DiGilio, who is off this evening. I'm here with my man, Tom Hush, Vic Vaughn in news, Dan Long keeping the ship afloat as well. We're talking about the 10 essential horror movie scores and what it truly means to be scared by a piece of music. Is there anything in the world more, I don't know, more, or at least less scary than a piece of music? You think about it, you're watching The Sound of Music and you're like, oh, this is a beautiful, the hills are alive, we're enjoying our time, you feel so gleeful, and then all of a sudden, that note can turn minor and then it turns into Puppet Master. Why is it that music has such an effect on our hearts and our souls? And why is it so important to these horror films? We're getting a ton of great texts. And again, 312-981-7200. We mentioned the Jaws theme when the shark attacks, which you just heard. And then from the 630, when I was a kid, all I'd have to hear was the first few bars of the intro music to the creature features. And that creaking coffin lid would terrify me. A lot of times scarier than most of the movies themselves. Hey, 630, I can totally agree with you. I remember when I was a young kid, I would sneak into my parents' room, and they'd watch late-night shows, because I didn't have a TV in my room at the time. And the one time they watched this show that was really big in the 1990s called Tales from the Crypt. And it was hosted by this puppet, which was a skeleton. Yeah, I laugh looking back on it because it actually was supposed to be like a humorous tongue-in-cheek show. But just the fact that that music would come on and they'd show these little, I guess, featurettes of these horror films and these horror segments. And they were the scariest little pieces of a film that I saw. And still to this day, they scare me. But I remember that theme song and that creepy coffin getting cracked open. That would just terrify me to this day. But then again, I'm the guy who literally was scared for years from Ernest Scared Stupid, which
that
was
you.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. Well, if you think about it, when that movie came out, I must have been 8 or 7. One of the first movies that I saw in McHenry County's theater, which in by itself in the early 90s was a scary place itself. I think we had a Pac-Man arcade machine from the 1970s that was there. Everything smelt like old swamp, and seeing that film with that troll was just terrifying. And I remember how scary it was. Have you ever seen the Ernest movies?
Ernest Scared Stupid. I love that. I just, it's weird. I got a kick out of those movies. I love Ernest Scared Stupid. Hey, Vern. Like, yeah. Look out.
And that's the funny thing, but it was those kind of scores when you're a young kid, and I'm guessing that this is what the 312 meant from the Jaws theme or from the 630 when they were a kid. A lot of those little creaks and creepy, crawly sounds really affect you. From the 773, Tom, you will love this person, Suspiria. And
yes,
you have a lot of background behind this film. Can you give us a little bit of an update or a little peek behind the scenes of Suspiria?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that Nick isn't here because Nick is truly an authority on this. You know, he's been watching Suspiria. He saw Suspiria in the theater in 70mm. You know, he was there for its original release. But when I found out about Suspiria, it's this crazy Italian giallo movie. Giallo is specifically Italian kind of slasher stuff. It's named giallo, which is Italian for yellow, because that's the color of the kind of dime store Penny Dreadful books, you know.
Oh, okay.
All those kind of like noir and mystery and very kind of pulpy novels were always had a yellow
cover.
So
not the dessert jello.
No, not
giallo.
Giallo.
Okay.
So it's a giallo movie directed by Dario Argento, who is one of the kings of the giallo genre, and it essentially follows a young American girl as she travels to Berlin to join a dance company.
I will give you a dollar if you can say giallo genre 5 times fast.
Giallo genre, giallo genre, giallo genre, giallo genre, giallo genre.
Do you accept the Venmo?
Venmo, PayPal, whatever you got.
Okay, hit me with it.
But essentially, she goes and joins this Berlin dance company and finds out that it's actually a coven of witches.
Ooh.
And the score for the original was done by a band called Goblin.
Yeah.
And it is a very, very fitting. Very iconic score. I even own it on vinyl. It's that much fun to listen to on its own because they're a band in their own right. They really just work as music in general, but they have that same kind of horror tinkly score that scares everybody. And Suspiria is an incredibly scary movie. I think one of the scariest ever made. Maybe it's lost a little bit of its luster to some of the younger audiences who have seen things more extreme. The remake from last year is a very different type of movie. Mm-hmm. Still scary, but very strange. But here's a little bit of that Suspiria score.
Let's hear it. Oh man, see, they hit you with that little bit of ghoulish singing in the back that really, really makes the hair on your back stand up. I love it. Suspiria. I'm going to have to check that one out. It's on my list. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. Again, 312-981-7200. We've got Joe. Joe, what's going on, man? What's your thought on horror movie scores?
Hi, nice to talk to you both.
Great.
One of my favorite film composers, I collect film scores myself, and is James Bernard, who's associated mainly with the Hammer horror films from the 60s and early 70s. And I think his scores, especially like the Horror of Dracula and a lot of the other other Hammer horror films, were just superb. The way he was so evocative, especially when you have Peter Cushing as Dr. Van Helsing tackling Dracula, you have to have James Bernard's music, you know, in the background.
Tom, do you got a little bit of this?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of Horror of Dracula. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
So
great call, by the way. Yeah, keep those calls coming because I'd love to find out what our listeners think about these horror films because I'm so oversaturated nowadays with the immense amount of slasher films and the Saws, and now horror movies don't have the same kind of je ne sais quoi. That they used to have in the 70s and everything. So I love hearing about, you know, what it was when you were young and growing up that really, really made you scared. Yeah, so let's hear a little bit about that. Yes, I love this. I love it. Right from the get-go, it takes you back to that great, great time when movies were first starting to really become bigger than life. Right, Tom?
Yeah, especially the Hammer horror movies, which kind of took the original Universal monster. Now, they're not associated with Universal in any way, but they took the stories of Dracula, Frankenstein, what have you. And they updated them for a much more intense sort of viewing experience. This is the, as Joe mentioned, this is when Peter Cushing took over the role as both Van Helsing, Abraham Van Helsing, and Dr. Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Christopher Lee, in his iconic performance as Dracula. He's the Dracula that I love the most. And you know who Christopher Lee is, of course.
Yeah.
Saruman from The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I was going to say Doc from Back to the Future.
No.
Wait, is that...
That's...
Christopher Lloyd?
Yeah, that's Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, okay. Different guy.
Christopher Lee is a horror icon, and he's got this amazing voice. Even later in his life, before he passed away, he recorded a metal album because this metal band loved his voice so much and loved him so much in the horror franchises that he was a part of. So those Hammer movies really took things to the next level. They were bloody, they were sexy, and they were so beloved, coming straight out of Britain, too. So they had this very gothic feel.
Man, Joe, thank you for opening up my eyes to the Hammer films. And Tom, I'm so glad that I have you to reference because I love learning about these films. We're going to roll through a few text messages as well. 815, I recently streamed The Orphanage on Hulu, and they don't like slasher movies, but they said that this was perfect. Very little violence, but a lot of frights and unexpected twists. That's another thing. What are you meant to expect? Do you like the jump out scares? Do you like the suspense that builds up over time? And what is it about that slow billowing of music that really, really sets the stage? Again, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Give us a text. We have another person from the 847. They watched the Trilogy of Terror as a kid, and it messed me up. I couldn't sleep for about a week.
The Trilogy of Terror is a much beloved, very much beloved set of TV movies, starring Karen Black. And I think for people our generation, the only thing that she would have been in that, in terms of horror, that we would maybe remember is Rob Zombie's House of 1,000 Corpses, in which she plays.
Talk about a movie that really messed me up.
Yeah, she's Mother, I think it's Mother Firefly is her character's name, but she's like the matriarch of the psychos that live in the house.
Jeez.
And that's what we probably would have seen her in. But the Trilogy of Terror definitely scared an entire generation of people, especially the third movie in the Trilogy of Terror, which involves Karen Black and an evil psycho voodoo doll that goes around and tries to kill people. Not unlike Chucky, you know, from Child's Play.
You know, the doll thing, it had me when I was young, but like when I hit like 15, I couldn't dive into that being scary anymore. Tom, I wanted to know, and I see Vic there, and if you want to jump in too, Vic, I'd love to hear your thoughts as well. Do you remember that first film that really scared the pants off you, that made you not be able to sleep in a week? Because I love that 847, that they weren't able to sleep for a week when they were young. And for me, like I said, Ernest Scared Stupid was terrifying. I couldn't
sleep
for weeks. And then maybe the second film was Ghoulies, if you remember, because that was kind of like a little just monstrous little creature that kind of jumped out and scared you.
That was one that kind of came as part of the big rush for little monster movies from Gremlins.
Oh, yeah, from Gremlins. And the 1980s was the most hilarious time for movies because all the movies, they sucked. They all sucked.
Hold on.
I'm thinking as far as horror movies go, they were so campy that it almost was...
I'm about to throw hands right now. Michael.
Are you feeling? You're not feeling that? Hey, Tom, okay, so what was your favorite movie? Or what was the movie that scared the pants off you when you were young? And then, Vic, well, if you're thinking of one, too, we're going to go to you next.
All right. Okay. So the first one that really made me not sleep for a week was Alien.
Oh, okay.
Because I was, for a period of time, I was really into space. And I thought space was really, really cool. I was so excited about what was out there.
Not so cool anymore. It's just not
so cool. Not so cool anymore when you find out that there could be some alpha predator living out, just, it comes out of eggs, and it basically kisses you on the mouth, and then it bursts out of your chest. That chest burster scene was so traumatizing to me that I would just like, I would wake up with nightmares, just like scratching my chest and be like, ugh.
Is it true you didn't eat eggs for a week too?
No. Yeah.
Oh man.
No way. I was just like, I don't trust that egg. Easter became a horrific holiday for me. You know, that's just, you can't live knowing that there might be this horrible space beast that lives out in the middle of the galaxy. It made all the fun of Star Wars gone. I was just like,
wait, don't open the other door because that's where the alien lives.
That's where the alien lives, and it's going to attach itself to your face and impregnate you. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a really tough one to watch for me, but I still, I worship that franchise. I love Alien.
Still going on, too. Hey, Vic, what about you? What was that movie that really scared the pants off you when you were young that couldn't make you, that made you not sleep for a week?
The Exorcist.
Oh,
yeah, and I was very sheltered. My parents didn't let me watch. They wouldn't even let me watch MASH, the TV show. And I don't even really know why, but I remember whenever that would come on, time for bed. But so we weren't watching any horror films, to say the least. But I stayed the night for, it was like a sleepover. I might have been maybe 11 or something
That's
like that.
That's how it always happens.
I was not
a
teenager yet. Yeah, and somebody put it on, and The Exorcist scarred me for quite a while to go from, it's like going from 0 to 60, you know, and because I don't even think I had seen a horror film yet, so.
Oh, do you remember a specific scene that really stuck with you?
Nah, I that'd be going, maybe, I guess probably the vomit scene.
Oh, that was mine too.
Freaky for me.
The head spinning around too.
Yeah.
Couldn't eat pea soup for a week.
Right, right. I think we that night, I do remember, with we were all sleeping on the floor in sleeping bags, and we left the hallway door open with the light on in the hallway. There was about five of us.
Yes, I love it. I remember sleeping with the light on. It's funny, back in the day, because I would be so terrified too of these ghosts and ghouls, but then at the same time I wanted to see more. Like I was kind of obsessed with horror movies after I saw the first few, because I love that feeling of being scared.
Still can't watch them very often because they still freak me out too much. I don't watch horror films really. Every now and then,
I still get nightmares. I'm not, you know, I'm mad enough to say that I still get nightmares sometimes when I'm watching these horror films. But now it's more so, I guess, when I'm thinking about it, the films that. It's hard. Like, it's not ghoulish films anymore. Now it's more so about, like, I'm trying to think of a good movie that I saw. Like, anything with guns and stuff like that kind of freaks me out. Or, you know, just like the killer without a cause. You know, those are the scariest movies. I remember Scream had a big effect on me, and that happened. I saw that at a sleepover as well. Man, those sleepovers, let me tell you, you'd go into them, and then you could not escape, because there's no way you could leave as a young Vic Vaughn and say, hey, guys, no, this isn't for me. I'm going to go to the other room for a minute.
Right.
We're talking the best horror movie scores. We still need to get to this list, and I can't wait, because this is some of the best music in the entire world. But we do got to take a quick break. Again, this is Michael Heidemann in for Nick DiGilio here on WGN Radio. Welcome back. We are talking horror movie scores. This is Michael Heidemann in for Nick DiGilio, who's taking the night off. It's so interesting, because I love hearing Vic's story about, you know, the sleepovers, and Tom about how he couldn't watch Alien for a long time. And we're diving into, you know, just the thought process of what it is about these horror movie scores and these soundtracks that really get to us. We're going to get to our call in just a second here, but I want to run down of the rest of the show real fast for our listeners to see what you have coming up, because we got a great set of interviews coming up, especially at 3 a.m. when our one and only Tom Hush is going to be speaking to the legendary, one of the greatest Chicago icons, and on the topic of horror films, greatest horror maestros, Rich Coe's Svengoolie himself, coming up at 3 a.m. Tom, can you, like, this must be one of the top interviews ever, at least top 10. Svengoolie. Come on, man.
Yeah, I'm really glad that Rich is going to take the time to talk with me, you know? Really, he's a great guy. He's been on the show many times. Him and Nick are great pals, and I've been watching him since I was a kid.
So. Yeah, and it's also awesome that he stayed up until 3 a.m. just to speak to you. That just speaks to how much you must mean to him.
Yeah, he's... He's a cool guy. He's a very cool guy, Svengoolie.
So we have that coming up. Svengoolie himself. Get your calls in 312-981-7200. We're talking movie scores at the moment. Then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to speak to comedian and legendary party animal. Yes, I said it. Fraternity Sorority Sisters. Turn up that radio. Legendary party animal, Bert Kreischer, who's coming to Chicago Theater on November 9th. This man has the greatest stories of all time. And if you don't believe me, just stay tuned. For God's sakes, Oliver Stone bought the rights to his life. Rolling Stone, when he was 21 years old, claimed him as the number one party animal in the nation. They wrote a whole story on him about this. And now he's a comedian. He has Netflix specials, podcasts, so much. So listen to that. We have that coming up. Thanks again to Bert for diving in with us and calling us and staying up late. And then, of course, we got to keep things music. We're talking music tonight. I'm bringing in one of the hottest hip-hop artists straight from Chicago, who's coming in live to do some raps for us, some freestyle raps. And we're going to throw a little curveball at him. Tom and I kind of cooked up something earlier, so I'm excited to speak to Kennedy Pullman, a.k.a. K-E-N, killing every note, the God-level goat, who I'm sure you all enjoy. Even if you aren't a big fan of rap music and hip hop, this is just the theater of the mind. The way that he can create an entire song, an entire poetic justice, beautiful explosion of words and poetry from the top of his head. It's incredible what he does. But right now we're going to dive back into those horror movie scores. We got Roosevelt on the line.
Hello?
Hey, what's going on, man? Welcome to the show. What's your movie?
Hi, Hey, how you doing? How you guys doing?
We're doing so good, man. How's it going?
Fantastic. I wanted to mention a couple of things. What I remember as far as the really scary movies that you couldn't sleep when you went to the theater was also, I agree, it was also The Exorcist. Now, speaking of The Exorcist, I'm going to tie it all together with the score or the music. And back then, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was one of the first more recognizable soundtracks. And almost, I know a lot of my friends had it. Tubular Bells was the sound that was the artist.
Yeah.
And we had it on vinyl, and I still have it, actually. But that was the most recognizable.
Wait, Roosevelt, you had the song on vinyl. Now, when did you find time to spin that? Are you sitting at a party, and you're just like, hey, guys, I got the newest hit?
No, but I mean, no, back then, you know, we were into Twilight Zone and the music, you know, that type of stuff.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? And then before that was also Alfred Hitchcock with Psycho, and the music in Psycho, not necessarily the soundtrack, but you mentioned sounds, you know, especially in Psycho. So when it comes down to soundtracks, the more recognizable one was The Exorcist and to some extent Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as movies nowadays that I like the fact that they're like the Twilight Zone. Like, I don't know if you guys ever heard of The Gift with Keanu Reeves. It's Giovanni Ribisi.
Okay.
Katie Holmes is in it.
The Gift. Oh, I have heard of this movie. Tom, have you seen this movie?
Oh, that is a fantastic movie. Another movie is Stir of Echoes. It was filmed here in Chicago with Kevin Bacon. That's the type of movie I like nowadays because, you know, the monsters, I've been through it, you know, as far as Frankenstein and Dracula and all that. But, you know, that type of, more like a Twilight Zone type of thing. You know, Twilight Zone, there was always a twist. And there was to some extent, the karma. In other words, the person that was the meanest. And similar to another movie you guys mentioned, Trilogy of Terror, and there was another one called, similar to that, they had like five different stories.
Jeez.
And that was Tales from the Crypt. I don't know if you ever heard of that one.
Give me a break, Roosevelt. That was one of the most terrifying movies of all time. Thank you so much for the call, man. I really, really appreciate that. Again, we're taking calls all night, 312-981-7200. We have a lot of show coming up. We're going to keep things spooky, though, because we have a great interview coming up with the one and only Rich Coase, Svengoolie himself, done by our own Tom Hush. Again, this is Michael Heidemann in for Nick DiGilio. We're about to hit the news with Vic Vaughn.
WGN. You're listening to the Nick DiGilio Show, 1 to 5 in the morning. As you can probably tell, I am not Nick DiGilio. If you're a daily listener, you know that Nick has been feeling a little bit under the weather the last couple of days. Got through the last few days of shows, but it finally got to him, a little bit of a cold, so he's taken the morning off. I am producer Tom Hush, producer of the Nick DiGilio Show, and I'm really excited to be here with you this morning. We're going to get right back to Mike Heidemann in just a moment, but we wanted to take a moment to talk to one of Chicago's true legends of media, television, everything. Of course, I'm talking about Rich Coase, better known all around the United States as Svengoolie, your horror host with the most. Got a lot to talk about. It's October. It's Halloween time, so naturally we have to have Rich on to talk about what's going on the show. And he's got a lot of stuff to talk about in terms of celebrating those 40 years. There's an event coming up later in the month on the 26th of October. That's a Saturday. It's an evening with Rich Coase celebrating 40 years as Svengoolie. It's going to be over at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street here in the beautiful city of Chicago. And also some fun stuff with superheroes. Svengoolie has entered the DC universe. We're going to talk all about that. So let me bring on to the show Mr. Rich Coase. Rich, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Tom, you're a real utility player here.
Yeah, I try to be. You know, people have told me that I have a face for radio, so I think I'm in the right place to be doing this talk.
Very good.
So, Rich, I'm going to start a little bit with my background with you. Of course, Nick, he watched your show from day one all those years ago, and he's been a fan for a really long time. I was not introduced to Svengoolie until you had moved over to WCIU. And you started doing the show then. I believe that was back in 1995. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We when the U first came on as the U in 1995, I was one of the first people on the air.
And I fell in love right away. I had never seen a show like yours before, and you were really an introduction to a lot of classic horror movies for me as a kid. It was always a special treat when I would get to stay at my grandma's house, and she would put on Svengoolie as a special treat for hanging out. We'd order a pizza, get a liter of RC, and we'd sit down and watch your show. So it's I got the latter part of your career, but it's you haven't stopped since.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear. And it's funny that you mentioned that your grandmother indoctrinated you into watching, because I hear that a lot, that it's something that's almost being passed down from generation to generation. You know, folks will actually introduce their kids to maybe the classics by having them watch my show, and it's very cool that it's a generational thing.
And that's something I noticed when you were at the Flashback Horror Weekend back in August. Nick conducted a 40 Years of Svengoolie panel sort of thing, showed a ton of hilarious clips, and went through your whole career. I remember there was a kid, couldn't have been older than maybe 4 or 5 years old, completely decked out as Svengoolie, and you brought them on stage and had them hang out with you. I mean, how does it feel to have children that young worshiping Svengoolie?
It's actually pretty cool. I like the fact that, first of all, that they're getting into the horror movies. I think, you know, 4 years old might be a little young for some of the stuff that's a little more intense. But it's great, because it really just knocks me out that our audience ranges from such very small kids all the way to senior citizens and everybody in between. You know, I wouldn't advise too many senior citizens to dress up like me, but it's very cool, and I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me.
Part of the reason is because your show is so fun and light, even though it's dealing with horror movies and scary stuff. I mean, the rubber chickens, everything, the bits, the fake commercials are just spectacular. I guess that's why it's such a family-friendly show. I mean, how do you come up with some of these bits to keep them family-friendly and good for a wide audience?
Well, basically, you know, the whole gist of MeTV is that it's family entertainment. And I just kind of subscribe to that sort of thing. And when we do the bits, obviously, I'm not trying to do stuff that's going to be too adult. And, you know, we may throw in a few mild double entendres here and there. But basically, we're trying to do something that is going to appeal to the wide audience out there. And I will throw in little references or jokes here and there that I think only a certain percentage of the audience is going to get. But they're almost like Easter eggs for those viewers. And, you know, we're trying to have, you know, everybody have a good time who watches. And there's, you know, the slapsticky type stuff and things that, you know, the kids will especially enjoy. And then there's the wordplay that I think a lot of the adults get into. And I think that, you know, that we're it's a kind of scatter approach, but it's meant to entertain everybody who's watching.
Well, it works every single week, Rich. I never fail to laugh at one of your bits or one of the jokes that you make. It really makes me feel like a kid again, which is saying something when I'm only 25 years old, to go back, what, maybe, you know, 10, 15 years to when I was first starting to watch Svengoolie. So the show is still just as fun as ever. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what's coming up for Halloween. You know, this is October. It's the scariest month of the year, surely one of your favorite months. What's the plan for the shows this month?
Well, we've got mummy movies. It's been a while since we've really shown some of the classic Universal mummy movies, and this Saturday we start with the original with Boris Karloff, the original Mummy, which is a fascinating movie, and a lot of people who really aren't that familiar with it at first, when they're watching it, think that it's kind of weird because this is one mummy movie where you don't constantly have the all, you know, wrapped up mummy, you know, shambling around slowly trying to attack people. A lot of it is more Boris Karloff in his portrayal of the kind of ancient Egyptian guy who is very creepy and starts to try to get his revenge on the family that stole the, as he put it, stole his princess bride's mummy from her tomb, and he's trying to find her and reincarnate her as well. And so you get him wrapped up as the mummy at the very beginning, but for the rest of the movie, he's this other character, and it's a little bit different. But then we have two more sequels to it from along the way. And along the way, you get not only Boris, but then in the next one, it's an old cowboy star, Tom Tyler, playing the mummy. And then in the last one we show, it's Lon Chaney Jr., who is under the mummy makeup, who actually hated the mummy makeup, by the way. he actually got them to make his facial stuff more of just a mask that they could put on him, because he got to the point where he just hated sitting in the makeup chair. But they're all entertaining as heck and a lot of fun. And like I said, we haven't shown the classic mummy stuff in a while, so I think it's a good way to get into Halloween this year.
I wanted to ask, when it comes to Halloween, you are Svengoolie year-round. How do you prepare for Halloween? You know, what special stuff do you like to do in your personal life that gets you ready for this time of the year?
Well, basically, it's like gearing up for a battle, because we have so many appearances that, you know, I've got to really be prepared. Already, what we did last weekend, we were at the New York Comic Con. We flew to New York for one day, then came back because the next day we had an appearance in Hammond at the Haunting in Hammond, and Butch Patrick, you know, little Eddie Munster was there. And, you know, every weekend now I've got at least two appearances. So I've got to just be ready to, you know, be hitting the road constantly. And it's a little intense because we're also working on shows at the same time. And, you know, it's probably the busiest time of year for me. It used to be that this was the only busy time of year, but now I'm doing appearances all year long, but this is the most intense. So I just have to, you know, get into the mindset that I'm going to be pretty busy.
Absolutely. We'll get into some of those appearances coming up and all this special stuff, including your appearance in the DC Universe. We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking to Rich Coase, better known as Svengoolie, all around America, your horror host with the most. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN.
He, of course, is Imhotep. Junior read the scroll because he's inept. Made him come to life and take a step.
720 WGN, the Nick DiGilio Show, 1 to 5 a.m. As you can tell, this is not Nick DiGilio. This is his trusty producer, Tom Hush, filling in for Nick for a little bit here. He is a little bit under the weather, and we wish him the best. I know he's catching up on a bunch of TV and a bunch of stuff, so I know he'll have plenty to talk about on Monday morning when he returns. But right now, we are talking to one of Chicago's TV legends, Rich Coase, a.k.a. Svengoolie, who has been hosting the Svengoolie Show for 40 years now. It's hard to believe. I hopped on around the late 90s when he made the move over to WCIU, and I've been a loyal viewer ever since. We're talking a little bit about what he's up to this month. It is October, the spookiest month of the year, and he's got a month of mummy movies going on. He's got so many appearances coming up, so let's welcome him back to the show. Rich, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much, Tom. I appreciate it. And Nick, if you're out there, I hope you get well soon and you're feeling better.
I swear, he's rising stock in Vicks Vapor Rub right now. He's used every Vicks product on the menu. He's got the tissues. He's got the Dayquil. He's got, you know, the Vicks Vapor Rub lozenges. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing. People have to realize, those of us who have to talk for a living, you know, anybody else can get a cold and still kind of muscle through, but when something happens to your throat and it's hard to talk, you know, we have to kind of, you know, wave the white flag and take a break in
Absolutely.
Order to make it through it all.
Absolutely. All right, let's jump into something that I'm really excited about coming up this month. Svengoolie is invading the pages of the DC Universe, and you're going to be hanging out with all of the DC superheroes, Superman, the Green Lantern, Batman, Wonder Woman, what have you. This is really exciting because it shows how much that the character Svengoolie has impacted the national stage. You move to MeTV in 2011, and people can watch you all across the country, wherever MeTV is available. But now they can read you in DC Comics. This is going to start on October 16th, and if your Twitter is to be believed, that run has been extended as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting for me, too, to actually be, since I was a fan of comics since I was about 9 or 10 years old, and the comics that I really got into as far as superheroes were the DC comics with Superman and Batman and The Flash, and to be in a story with them is just amazing to me, and yeah, it's been extended because the comic books come out every week. Different ones come out every week, like on a Wednesday. So starting on Wednesday, October 16th, and also on the 23rd, there'll be a special two-page segment in each one of the DC books that's kind of sort of a bio, and to give people information about me so that those who are not completely familiar with us will, you know, get some of the backstory on Svengoolie. And then starting on October 30th, that will be the beginning of the four-chapter Svengoolie Meets the DC Universe adventure, in which I am facing off against a terrible menace that I cannot handle myself. I know that's hard to believe. And I have to enlist the Justice League with Green Lantern and Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman to help me to defeat it. And it's great stuff. The artwork is done by an artist named Christopher Jones, who has just done an amazing job on this stuff. It's so very cool. And I think people are really going to enjoy it. And the nice thing about it is, you know, I actually had a hand in helping write it. And it really has kind of the mixture of not only, you know, the typical superhero stories, but also kind of the flavor of our program as well. I think you'll identify a lot of things that are from our show that will be in there as well. And one of the coolest things is I get to interact with one of their greatest villains, and let's just say it's somebody who is getting a lot of press right now for a certain movie.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. That's quite the preview, Rich. I mean, now I'm going to have to go every single week, get myself some DC Comics and read up on the Svengoolie adventure. This is written by Dan DiDio, who is one of your biggest fans.
Yeah, that's true. It was so funny because Dan is actually the publisher of DC Comics. And a couple of years ago at the big C2E2 convention that I do every year, I was doing a signing, and he was about, you know, halfway down the line of people waiting, about a half hour away from meeting me, when my executive producer, Jim Roach, you know, who walks up and down the line just trying to, you know, keep people's spirits up while they're waiting to meet me, happened to find out who he was, and he came back to me and said, "You know who's in line here?" And that was just amazing to me that, you know, he didn't ask for any special favors or anything. He just waited in line like everybody else, and we spoke and got to be friends, and he was the one that originally decided to get me involved in Mad Magazine when they did a special satire of me, right, about a year ago. And he kept saying, we should do something else. And I was all for it, certainly. And he came up with the outline for this Svengoolie DC Universe story, and then I helped fill in some of the dialogue and a few plot twists along the way. And, you know, it's just very exciting for me. Like I said, I've been a longtime fan of comics, and it's a real treat, and yeah, I'm very flattered to be included in there.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge treat for Svengoolie fans all across the nation. Again, October 16th is when you can start collecting these comics and join in on the Svengoolie Justice League adventure. You mentioned that you and Dan were out at the New York Comic Con doing a special panel on your 40th anniversary talking about this. And I wanted to know, what was the reaction like? I mean, you're a Chicago guy. We all know you here in the Windy City, but what was it like in New York? How were people reacting out there?
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because When we were about to go there, I kept thinking, okay, I've done a lot of conventions here in the Chicago area and you know, the surrounding states. And I thought, okay, people here know me. And I was like, are people going to be, you know, that knowledgeable about me when we get to New York? And I was totally wrong about that, because there were people everywhere that recognized me. There were people wearing their Svengoolie shirts. There was even a couple people dressed like me that were there. And when we did the panel, it was, they said, okay, it's like an 800 person room. And I'm like, oh brother, there will be tumbleweeds going through there. And again, I was wrong. The place was just about full. And it was so great. We got such a great reception. And I guess, you know, it proves to me that the fact that we're on all over the country has meant that people are really picking up on it. So it was very flattering and a great experience.
Well, it's well deserved, because you spend so much time going out and hanging out with the fans, meeting with them, taking photographs, and I can't imagine the schedule that you must have, including coming up at the end of the month. Folks here in Chicago are going to have an opportunity to spend an evening with you. That's coming up at the Museum of Broadcast Communications over on 360 North State Street, Saturday, October 26th, an evening with Rich Coase celebrating 40 years as Svengoolie. And if I'm not mistaken, that's going to be moderated by WGN's own Dave Plyer. That's correct?
Yeah, he's going to be there. And actually, we're hoping to get in touch with Nick and see if he would be willing to come along too.
Well, this is your call. This is your call to action right now.
yeah. So we're hoping he'll be there as well. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. As you know, the museum's been going through some renovations, and they had to take a lot of the exhibits off of public view. But on that night, they're going to reopen a temporary exhibit of my original coffin and some of our set pieces. And it's going to help to celebrate my 40 years. You'll get a chance to meet with me. We are hoping possibly to have a special handout of a single issue with the entire Sven Meets the DC Universe comic available. And also there'll be food and drink and such. And there'll be a costume contest. We want people to come there, you know, dressed up in their best costume, and possibly they could be winners there. And it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll probably, again, show some clips from the show and, you know, just talk a little bit about my career. It's the last time we did this was for my 35 years, mm-hmm. and that was more of a me on stage type program. But this one is going to be a little more relaxed. It's going to be almost like a cocktail party. And we'll get to talk to everybody and have a good time. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're hoping to also show a special In Spence Around short subject. And if it's Spence Around, for those who don't know, is when we will go into a piece of film and redub some of the lines and add in sound effects. And we're trying to line that up, so we'll be able to do that. It should be a fun night, and it's very flattering, again, for me to be honored in such a way at the museum. And the museum is so great now. They've got so many cool new exhibits. And this one coming up about, you know, rock and roll on TV is going to be especially exciting. And you can find out more about that and get tickets and everything else at museum.tv.
They work incredibly hard at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Their exhibits are top-notch, and they really do spend a lot of time putting together original elements and original set pieces. And so if you want to see all of that, that's going to be at the Museum of Broadcast Communications Saturday, October 26th, and that's going to be from 7 to 11. Have a cocktail with Rich Coase and celebrate 40 years of Svengoolie. Rich, thank you so much for taking the time tonight. We really appreciate it, and for chatting with the producer of the Nick DiGilio Show.
Tom, you did a great job here, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you and to Nick, and hopefully we'll see you at the big event at the museum.
You better believe it. 40 years of Svengoolie, Rich Coase, broadcasting legend here in Chicago. Rich, you have a great rest of your night.
Thanks a lot, Tom. You too.
All right. We'll be right back here on 720 WGN. Mike Heidemann coming back here on the program. Stick around, everybody.
Whose world is this? It's my
Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Nick DiGilio. And we were talking a little bit about horror films. We had a little bit of Svengoolie mentions. And now we're going to dive into something that I think everyone can relate to, and that is pet peeves. There is nothing worse than some of, you know, the things that go on in your life where you're just like, can you just stop? There's many times when I just want to, in my head, I'm just screaming to the strangers, just, can you just stop? Especially living here in Chicago when you're around so many people at so many points in your day, and whether it be on the L or at home or with your brother or friends. And it's incredible that perfect timing landed us on this date, because this week on Sunday is the start of Pet Peeve Week. Can you believe it, Tom?
Yay!
I feel like we should have a theme song or something like that for Pet Peeve Week.
It's just nails on a chalkboard. That's just...
Good. That actually
Pet Peeve Week
fits very well with our horror music sound, I suppose. So the thought of just, you know, loud chewing of gum on the L, or, I don't know, nails on a chalkboard, it just always irritates me and gets underneath my skin. And we're going to take a look at this list that was put out by the Huffington Post. But again, we'd love to have you join our conversation. 312-981-7200. You can call or text in. But let's just dive right in to the things that make us cringe. Number one, of course, loud chewing, or people chewing with their mouths open. This, you know, it doesn't irk me as much as it used to, maybe in when I was in high school or in lunch when I'd be in a cafeteria, because now it doesn't need to be right in my face. But it still is just that chomp, chomp, chomp just drives me nuts sometimes. I mean, am I right?
Yeah, I mean...
You're driving me crazy.
Well, there's a disorder even for people who have trouble with sounds and things like that. I think it's like misophonia or something.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard of that before.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, but this idea of disorder when it relates to sounds, some people really have trouble with it, and it like sets off a fire in their brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't mind people chewing loudly, but... Oh, okay, that I do mind. if that keeps happening, I think I might start losing.
What about
it,
Tom? What about this one? Oh, the soup, or the cereal that you can hear.
For me, it's like if you're chewing
coffee.
Something really loud, like nuts. You know, mm-hmm. There was a quick anecdote. I was trying to work on something.
You have a quick nut anecdote you're going to share with us?
I've got big old nut anecdote.
you are just setting yourself up for your own show.
I know. Next week, we'll be back. I was trying to work on something, and my girlfriend decided this was the most opportune time to eat a bowl of, like, Jordan almonds.
You
ever had Jordan almonds? And so I work in the world of audio. I'm cutting things up. And even with headphones on, all I could hear was her chomping and biting on these really loud almonds. And I got very close. I had to talk myself down. I was like, please don't blow up over this. This is really not that big a deal. There's a way to be polite about this. And I was losing my mind until finally she finished the whole bowl. I was like, are you done now? Now, okay, good.
You finished. What a good boyfriend, though. I applaud you that she waited till the whole bowl was done.
I do.
The thing that drives me crazy about the sound of your mouth, when people go like this, they're in between their sentences, they go...
That's shockingly specific.
It makes me irk, especially when, because I host an open mic night every single Saturday at Bill's Bar and Burger on 30 East Hubbard Street from 9 until midnight, and everyone is invited to come. But when you have performers who do get nervous, that sound in the microphone, I've heard a million times, and it drives me crazy. That's one of mine.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's a certain lack of mic discipline, and I'm not gonna pretend like I'm the king of mic discipline here, but... There are things that you want to do off mic if you can, but when you have people of the general public coming in and playing their beautiful music, sometimes they get a little nervous, their mouth gets a little bit dry, and they have to smack their lips into the mic.
Number two, when people are late or make me late because I'm waiting for them. It's very ironic that this is number two because we are waiting on a guest at the moment, not to put fire underneath their feet or anything. But that can drive you crazy sometimes too when people are late. I hate when people, when I'm the responsible one where you're waiting on me. I'm always just thinking, don't wait on me. Just do your thing. Don't give me, you know, the time that is wasting on you. Just do your own thing. I'll be there when I get there. I live on like Costa Rican time almost.
Costa Rican time?
Where you're just a little bit more relaxed.
Island time. Yeah.
It's island time, man.
Yeah, jeez.
Number three, when people who are chronically late, I mean, now you're adding a whole new level to this. When have you ever had that moment when you're hanging out with people and you have a party that you're going to set up, a Christmas party or Halloween party, and you know you need to tell them, you know the party is going to start at 3, but you tell them it starts at 2:30 just because you know they're going to be late?
Yeah, they're going to be fashionably late.
Give me a break here.
I mean, this is something that I learned in the food service industry. I used to work for a place called Cheesy's.
You worked for Cheesy's?
I did work for Cheesy's.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know what Cheesy's is, in Chicago, it is the gourmet of cheese, grilled cheese sandwiches. It's known far and wide. Many different types of purely grilled cheese sandwiches. And you worked at this debaucherous place, which turns almost like a Cinderella-like pumpkin after midnight into a drunk just smorgasbord of people coming in from Wrigleyville, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say anything too poorly about my former employers. They were great. They were very kind to me. But when I was working at the Cheesy's, I was based up in Evanston. They had one up in Evanston, which is now closed. And when I was working at that one of the first things my manager told me, she was really great. She said to me, if you're early, you're on time. Mm-hmm. If you're on time, you're late. And I take that with me every single day. Whenever I'm going somewhere, I always try to be at least 15 minutes early. Because you know what? It's really easy to just wait. Post up. Bring a book. You've got this magical computer. You know, it's called a cell phone, a smartphone that's in your pocket.
Yeah.
It can entertain you for literally hours. I think you can handle 15 minutes. Just sit there and chill. And that way, you're never late. You're always on time, because if you show up right when you're supposed to, then like you might be a little bit late. And in the food service industry, you better be clocking in on time.
Yeah, you're
There's
telling
changeover.
Me.
There are people who are waiting to get off shift. So get there, be ready when your shift time starts.
Yeah,
and then you're good.
I'd love to hear some listeners call in and hear what they have to say, because if you worked in the food industry, just like you're mentioning, you need to really crack the if you're going to be on time in the food industry, because you're there all day. You stink like Subway or you stink like Panera Bread. And I'm not saying this just because I may have worked at those places before, but I'm just saying when you want to go home, you want to go home. So make sure that you're on time. Number four, people who scruff their feet as they walk down the street. Whew. As a guy who needs to walk down Michigan Avenue every single day to get to work here in Chicago, and when I was growing up in McHenry, and you know, even if you're in high school or if you need to get around, certain sidewalks aren't meant for people who are slow walkers. And Chicago residents, tell me if I'm wrong, but there's times when I'm sitting behind a family and there's five people deep. Just let me through. Can't you just do the old straight line like we used to have in school? That would make things a lot easier. I'm just saying. Number five, I'm getting irked already. People who are smoking electronic cigarettes, very, very fashionable as of late, whether it be the CBD or the Juuls or the things that look like little USB drives. I actually was talking to our engineer Dan about this earlier, the fact that you see these everywhere, every single place. And I remember, I'm old enough to remember when you were smoking an electronic cigarette or a vape or whatever. Back in my day, it was called a vaporizer, and people would do it. But it was I know this from seeing my friends do it. It was a giant machine. No one had time or the space to carry around this giant machine that they were smoking a tube out of, almost like the caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland. And now you get to see all these kids who are just smoking, puffing away, and they're saying it's vaporizer. If it's a giant plume of smoke that you're seeing, that ain't vaporizer. That's smoke that's going into the air. I don't care if it smells like strawberries. It still kind of irks me. And tell me if I'm wrong. Again, 312-981-7200. Tell me what irks you. There's a lot of things, whether it be the phrase literally. I hear a lot of people saying that nowadays. I feel like we're losing a lot of our vocabulary throughout the words, throughout the world. And it's just funny to see this kind of stuff happen where we see words and language go down the drain for phrases like lit or some kind of slang, which I suppose I'll put on this list as well. The use of these new, you know, finagled words. I remember there was one time when I was with my cousin and I was looking at her Instagram and she was showing it to me and she was very excited. It was a holiday party that we were sitting at and her photos were great. She is like a very good photographer. And I said, "Wow, Casey, how did you get this photo so lit?" As in, well lit, what I was talking about. And this is the moment where I knew that I was way too old for the room. She goes, "Like lit?" And I go, "Yeah, you know, like light."
How'd you light it? Did you have a key light? Did you have a master light? What's going on?
She goes, "No, lit means cool." And I'm like, "No, it means light." And at that moment, I was like, "Oh shoot! Well, I'm in my 30s, and maybe I shouldn't be talking with the slang of today." Whatever, I can get over that kind of stuff. There's another thing that really irks me. Number 8 on this list: people who walk into the subway or the L, or the Metra here in Chicago, and stand right in front of the door and don't leave. I get it. You have places to go to. We all do. You got to stand right in front of the door, though. And the worst thing is, tell me if I'm wrong here, but the people with the bike, why are you sitting there with your bike? Just move to the side. It's fine. Or put it up on the wall or something. I don't know. Now I'm getting all perturbed and angry. We better go to the phone line real fast. We got Carl. Carl, how you doing tonight? Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Carl?
Hi. Yeah, I have our conversation has been invaded. Our language has been invaded by the term "I mean." In conversation, people will be talking and they'll be saying different things. I mean, they'll be saying, talking about the weather, or they'll be talking about sports. I mean. And I called the Harold Washington Library, and I asked them, I said, "Is this correct?" And they said, "No, it's absolutely not correct." And I said, "What would you call that?" And they said, "It's conversation filler is what it is." Mm-hmm. And it's everywhere. I heard Bill Maher saying it on his show. The news people are saying it on their show. People, celebrities that are being invaded. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere. And I count the times I hear that "I mean" thing, and it's grammatically it's not correct. It doesn't mean anything. It's kind of a way to hang on to your space in the conversation.
Yeah.
Instead of having silence, so somebody else can jump in, you go, "I mean," and so people think you're still speaking, but you're not. You're just stalling, but we're using the term "I mean."
You know, that is so true. And I mean has replaced "like" and you know. I hear that a lot too. Carl, great call, and I felt the pain in Carl's voice. Did you feel that too?
Well, yeah, my dad was a big proponent of correct grammar to mm-hmm. the point he was really, really a stickler for it. And he used to say that his problem, he's Scottish, you know, he came right off the plane from Scotland, and he had a problem with the way Americans would turn everything into a verb. He always said that in American English, there isn't a noun that can't be verbed. Which, you know, he'd say like, "Oh, people who own a Jeep, they don't drive over the mountain, they Jeep over the mountains." And he's like, "What? Mm-hmm. That's not a verb. That's mm-hmm. that's just you drive, you don't Jeep over them." He also really hated the term "burglarized." He was not a big fan of "burglarized." Now, I believe that's grammatically correct. You can say, "Oh, I was burglarized." But he always said "burgled." Oh, we've been burgled.
That just reminds me of an old McDonald's commercial or something like that. We got burgled. What did your dad do for a living?
He worked for Motorola for many years over at the, as many people in the Chicagoland area know, at the Motorola campus in Schaumburg.
Mm-hmm.
It was a serious thing. And he was very about communication and correct grammar.
Is our conversation being monopolized and infiltrated by these words? Are we being burgled of the beautiful English language? And that's something that we need to dive into a little bit more. Quick text before we go to break here real quick. From the 779, humming when people are eating drives me crazy. Wait a minute. So your people are eating a hamburger or something like that? And they're like humming themselves a song? That would drive me bonkers. 779. Please call in and tell me that this is not happening, or tell me that at least you live in like an a cappella like castle or something like that, or some kind of school where they need to teach singing and people are doing it for a reason, because or else I would move out of that town immediately. All right, we're going to talk more about the Pet Peeve Week, which is starting this Sunday. Let us know your pet peeves. Tom and I are going to dish it around and figure out if that irks us or is that just part of life. Welcome back. Tom, this music is just getting me more angry about these pet peeves. I'm getting on edge for just hearing and reading these text messages about really what irks you, and that's what we're diving into right now. Sunday is Pet Peeve Week, and we want to see what is bothering you. Get it off your chest. Call in to WGN Radio. There's no judgments here. We all have bad days. We all have things that bother us, and that's what we are here to help you with. 312-981-7200. We're going to take some calls real quick. We got David on the line. David, what is going on, my brother? How are you doing tonight?
Yes, my ex-wife, she would eat like a hamburger. She'd take a big bite, and she's chewing. She'd go, and she's chewing.
Was it like a specific song that she was aiming for, or did she just like this?
Just a couple of tones she would do while she was chewing.
Okay.
And I asked her why she hummed, and she said she can't stand the sound of her chewing when she's eating.
Huh. She did like an I'm hungry song or something.
To cover up the sound that in her head that, so she doesn't hear herself chew.
Okay. And then I'm guessing, is your new girlfriend or wife, she doesn't do this?
Correct. My wife does not do that.
Did you bring this up on like a first date? You're like, before we get any further, you got to understand you can't hum while you eat your hamburger.
Well, at first it didn't really bother me. We were only married for 3 years, so.
Hey, 3 years. So, that's 300. Yeah. That's a lot of hamburgers right there, my friend. David, thank you so much for the call, man. Thanks for joining us here on WGN. We got Diane on the line. Diane, oh, we were talking about this before the break. What's shaking, Diane? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. One thing that really bothers me is the people that are in a professional setting, including people on TV and on the TV news, they cannot pronounce words correctly.
What is there one specifically that you're aiming at that a lot of people get wrong?
And you hear this even in commercials a lot, the word is realtor, not realtor.
Realtor.
And how many times have you heard that? It just drives me wild. Like, haven't you ever seen the word spelled?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. Realtor.
And I always think, how the heck do you spell that word correctly if you can't pronounce it? Obviously, you've never seen the word ever.
Diane, what do you do for a living?
Well, I'm retired now, but I worked in business my whole life.
Okay, so yeah, I can see how that could work you.
Business office. And, you know, I've got problems there, too. Now, there was one word that just blew my mind. The word that was constantly mispronounced was the word subsidiary.
Okay, I can
see
that.
It's a word in finance that everybody knows, but people pronounce it subsidiary. And I'm thinking, subsidiary? What the hell is that? I never heard that word before, and how the hell would you spell that? I really want to tell these people, how do you spell that word? Because I never heard that word before.
Diane, I think you were a teacher in a past life, I think. Where are you calling from, Diane?
I'm calling from Hammond.
Oh, well, I hope everything is going well down at Hammond. Thank you so much for the call. I really felt like Diane was getting a little bit heated, and I love it because you can see it.
Pet peeves, man.
Pet peeve week again is happening on Sunday. Let's get one more call in before we need to hit the news. We got right here, Larry. You've been on hold for a little bit. Larry, welcome to the show. What's going on, man?
Hello?
Hey, what's going on, Larry? What's your pet peeve?
Hey, my pet peeve is when, like, somebody's, like, especially during interviews, like, on TV or radio or whatever, and their first word they say in the response is they start the sentence off with so. Mm-hmm. That just drives me up a wall when somebody says that.
Hey, do you remember when you were a kid, and did your mom ever say when you would start sentences with so, she'd be like, so buttons on your underwear?
No, she would never start.
Well, I know, Larry, you were supposed to agree with me, because I was going to say we got to bring that back.
Oh, well, you know, it seems like everybody does that, especially on TV interviews, like when I watch the news on Saturday and Sunday morning, and you know, like they'll have a special thing on about this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever the guest they have on there, they'll start a sentence. I don't know if they're told to say that or they just do it themselves. So, blah, blah, blah. You know, it just drives me up a wall.
I hear you, Larry. So, on that note, my friend, we do have to go to news. We're going to keep taking those calls through the 4 o'clock hour. This is a blast so far. We have so much more coming up here on WGN. Mike Heidemann in for Nick DiGilio. Let's get to the news with Vic Vaughn. Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Nick DiGilio. So excited that you're joining us here tonight, and as we dive into this beautiful Friday morning. The man behind the glass, Tom Hush, is with me all evening as well. Vic with the news. And right now we're diving into the things that irk us. What annoys you? For me, close to everything. I'm trying to get more zen in my life, but there are some things that really bother me. We have some callers that have been on the line for a little bit if you've been joining us. Again, if you want to join the conversation, text or call 312-981-7200. Let's get Rick on the line. Rick, what's shaking, man? What's irking you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
Not so much irrelevant anymore as it used to be, but most stores nowadays have the automatic doors.
Mm-hmm.
But in the old days, you actually had to open them. I would go with my wife. We'd either be going in or out. I'd grab the door, open it up. Somebody would come out of nowhere and push their way past. And it perturbed me so much that one day I decided, you know what, I'm going to start shouldering them as they come past. And I actually had one person out of everybody I did it to say something to me, and I told them, I'm not opening the door for you. I'm opening it for my wife and I to come in or out.
Okay, you gave you gave him a little, like, a lineman hit to the side, huh?
Yeah, just a little one.
Okay.
And I had one person get mad and say something to me, and I told him, you know, I'm opening it for us.
Mm-hmm.
If you want, I'll stand here and hold the door for you, but you need to wait for us to either come in or out.
Yeah, you tell me how it is. I understand.
My wife and I turned around and walked away, and she's like, what was that all about? And I told her, and at that point, I got an earful from her about how rude I was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, people have no consideration nowadays.
Yeah, you know, you were just keeping it real. I understand how that goes, Rick. I mean, come on, who wants to get pushed by the door? You're trying to just get through, and you know, people can be so rude sometimes. It's good to keep people on their toes. You know, Tom, I love the fact that he had like a script ready to go if anybody was like going to get in his face or anything like that. That's a smart move. If you're going to do something like that, give him a little lineman like hug to the side. You got to be able to explain yourself, which is amazing. Elizabeth, you've been on hold too as well. Elizabeth,
thank you for taking my call. My
great
biggest
to hear from
pet
you.
Peeve is pronouncing O-U-R, like A-R-E.
So our, like R.
Yes, and I just heard it on a commercial, and I was telling Mr. Hush, this guy got paid for it.
wait a minute, he got what?
Paid for saying that.
Yeah, he did. It's a very Chicago thing, though, Elizabeth, don't you think? You're saying our, like R.
No. I'm a native Chicagoan. I was born and raised and wed in the little village. No. Well, I was also a school teacher for 30 years.
Oh, you see, that makes a lot of sense. I'm getting a lot of school teacher presence on these phone calls because I think that you've been through the bulk of it. Elizabeth, we're getting a little bit of echo, so I'm going to put you on hold real quick. But thanks for joining us here on WGN. I love it.
She calls in all the time. She's one of my favorites, and she's standing up for the people here, standing up for the pronunciation police.
she's a supporter of the show and supporter of good grammar, and I can't thank you enough, Elizabeth, for calling our show. Speaking of good grammar, speaking of just using the mind in a way that not many people can do, I'm so excited to bring on our next guest, all the way from Chicago himself. Now, this is one man that has just blown away crowds all over the city for years now. I've met him at this little open mic that I do every single Saturday from 9 until midnight at Bill's Bar and Burger here in River North. And the first time I saw him, I was thinking, finally, there's somebody who has passion for music and is doing something different with their sound. And I mentioned this at the top of the show, and we finally got him in. We have the one and only hip-hop legend, K.E.N., the God-level goat, killing every note. What's going on, man? Great to see you tonight.
What's going on, Michael? First, I want to say it's an honor to be here. Shout out to WGN Radio just for having me on. Shout out to you for extending the offer. So I'm just ecstatic to have this opportunity.
Yeah, well, we've been talking for a long time about getting together, collaborating in some way, some assortment, because I play guitar, I play a lot of folk songs, a lot of love songs, acoustic style, and you, when you perform, you do this very, very interesting thing, and if anybody has ever been to an open mic or been to a live performance, you know that it's all about connection with the crowd, and that's the most important thing you can do when it comes to music, and what you do is you play a track, and you don't use the microphone, do you?
I don't. Ever since I realized that I had the ability to connect with people one-on-one, it was just a decision that I've made moving forward. Using a mic is cool, and in certain instances, you need to use a mic. But I feel like when we're doing intimate open mics, when it's, 40, 30 people, just having that interaction one-on-one, looking them in their eyes, interacting with them, dancing with them, is just so much more special, and it makes them remember the performance or the song so much more. And doing music for as long as I've been doing it, I've realized it's what makes you rememberable that makes your song popular. You can have a really good song, but if you're not doing anything that is going to resonate in people's heads after 40 more people go up, then you're not really moving in the right direction. So I try to just make sure everything I do sticks out.
Yeah, you're almost, when I looked at you and I saw you perform for the first time, I thought of you as more of like a rock and roller than a hip-hop artist or like in the traditional sense. Because at the end of the day, when you look back at the greatest artists of all time, do you remember the guys who sat behind the microphone? Great, yeah, they sounded amazing on vinyl. But you remember John Bonham, slamming away on stage, or Mick Jagger strutting across the stage and connecting with people, or maybe you remember when you saw Nirvana and they pushed over the drum set and got into the crowd, or that singer like Courtney Love dove into the audience, and that's what you brought to it. It's a very rock and roll sense. What was the first time when you thought to yourself, I'm going to step outside of my comfort zone and really get in people's faces, I suppose?
So it's interesting because I used to be the total opposite. Back when I was first starting music, I used to mimic more of a Jay-Z style. Jay-Z is super cool, super low-key, super mellow, nonchalant. So, I just used to ribbity-rap, rap bars, And people would like it, but I never really felt the same way. I never felt like people was paying me attention enough. I never felt like I was getting people to really rock with me as a person. Mm-hmm. And I used to have this big insecurity about looking stupid in front of people. Through movements, because I wasn't the most rhythmic person growing up. But it's something just clicked in my head when it was like, you know what? At this point, I just want to have fun while I'm on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And, when my friend, his name is The Ambiance, you're going to meet him one day. You've met him, actually. He's super cool.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of animated stuff. And he used to always tell me, saying, don't worry about what people think. Just have a good time, do you, and people are going to follow as long as you show confidence with it. So it was just it wasn't no specific moment. It just happened. I just kind of found the right song, and I kind of just started moving. You know, I just kind of said, forget it. I'm going to have fun, and if I project having fun onto people, they're going to have fun with me. And from that moment on, I've just been walking in the crowd, interacting with people, just doing every little thing to keep myself relevant in people's memories.
Where can we find your music and everything? We're going to be speaking with K.E.N. right after this quick break. But we wanted to know, where can we find you? Where can people see, you know, this atmosphere that you create and hear your music?
Yes, I am currently on all streaming services. Y'all can check me out on Apple, Tidal, Napster, any streaming service you have. K.E.N. That's K. dot like a period E. period N. My website is actually coming out really soon. I have to deconstruct it and reconstruct it. So follow me on Instagram, God Level Goat, and you can follow my music page as well at k.e.n. You just search that up and it'll pop right up.
Wonderful. This is great. I'm very excited that you're here, and I'm more excited because after the break, Tom and I cooked up a little experiment. We're going to throw a few curveballs at you to see and really test you out here. And I'm very excited. So listeners, call in if you want to join the conversation. 312-981-7200. We're speaking with K.E.N. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Nick DiGilio. Thank you again, Nick, for letting me take over the seat for just the evening. Behind the glass, Mr. Tom Hush. In news, Vic Vaughn. Keeping the station afloat, of course, Dan Long. Right now, we're speaking to K.E.N., a legendary hip-hop rapper, or soon-to-be legendary. One guy that when I saw him perform, I thought to myself, this is somebody that I need to know more about. I got to figure out where he's coming from and what makes him tick, because his performances are off the charts. Again, we're talking the whole room, and you're sitting next to me right now, but the whole room when you're performing really just stands still. Like, I've told you this before at the open mic nights, that I'm so excited when you come on, because when people are getting a little bit tired, it's getting a little late in the evening, you're that bit of energy that kind of boisters them through the rest of the night and gets them on their feet, and I love it. I love it. What was, like, the greatest experience you've had as an artist to date?
I've done so many shows in the limited amount of time that I've been a professional artist, and I have to think that off the top of my head, I can do like the top two or three. Hip Hop in Chinatown recently, I just did. We did a festival in Chinatown. It was super great. It was at least 2,000 to 3,000 people at any given point. I was hosting it, so I wasn't even performing, but I feel like being a host is just as important as being a musical talent, because you're a talent of the voice and a talent of the people. And that was super amazing, just to be up there for 5 hours and to be able to control people's energy for that long. And we had so many great, talented artists. So that was a very special moment in my life. Another special one was my first So Far Sounds set. So Far Sounds is a organization that gives artists a chance to perform at venues where people come for the sole intent of performing and listening. And that's a great thing as an artist, because if you go to so many bars and so many open mics and so many clubs, you got to fight for people's attention all the time. So to have people wanting to listen to you is spectacular, because it makes it so much easier. And the reception and the love that I got from that, you know, a quiet room and the ability just to go through the crowd as I want to, or have people really engage with me, was dope. And I think the number one event that I went to, and I'm not even pandering at this point, mm-hmm. It was the night that I won the first time at Bills.
Yeah.
Because I heard about Bills a whole bunch of times prior, and every time I was going to go, I never really got the chance. So the very first night that I went, it wasn't a super, super hectic or busy night. I was just walking by with my friend, and we stopped in. And shout out to Jada. And when I performed, the energy from you, from the crowd, it was just really awe-inspiring. It was just really like, they really actually like me for me, and they don't even know who I am, you know? Usually I go to places I know half the room, so it's like, yeah, okay, you kind of know me. So it's like, I don't say it's not as special, but when it's complete strangers and you're putting your vulnerability on the mic and you're putting yourself on the mic and telling your story, and they receive it so well to the point where, you know, you win something, you know, and they think that you deserve that out of all the other talented people who hit the microphone. It's just, it's awe-inspiring.
Yeah. Well, like I said, truly and genuinely, when I saw you perform, and I think, I know, when the rest of the audience saw you perform, we knew we were catching something special. And the cool thing about you is, I say this on the microphone a lot, but when I see you perform, I see a spark that, you know, a lot of the other performers don't have. You have a confidence that a lot of other performers can't grasp yet, and you get it. You get the connection with the audience, and it's not about, when you're creating music, it's not about just the pure talent, and you have to understand that. Like, think about performers like Bob Dylan and people who are very Iggy Pop, very, very, you know, quirky, strange people that wouldn't be able to win America's Got Talent or any of those shows, but something inside of them that you just see, and you're like, I want to see more of that person. And that's what I think that it remains true with you, K.E.N. I mean, I love what you do, and I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of your career. It's going to be a great, great journey for you.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I just, you know, I feel like it's been a science for me to be able to divide talent and, this sort of cookie-cutter look for yourself, because it's important that you have a mainstream market appeal if you want to get to that level. So dividing that versus realness and rawness, and still being able to touch upon issues and topics about your life and stuff that you experience, but put it in a way that makes it, I don't want to say fun, but that makes it really, you know, intriguing, where the point, like, it doesn't sound preachy and you want to listen. And that's been my battle, and I'm still trying to get better. So to hear these accolades and praises from you, it really touches me. I appreciate it.
Well, I wouldn't say them if I didn't mean them. And hopefully, you know, we keep growing together and we keep bouncing off each other and keep building this up. And but I do have to show, since we got you on air and you came all the way down to WGN Radio to sit here behind the mic, we need to see a little bit of your skills. Am I right?
Yes. I think that's only fair.
And it is Pet Peeve Week this Sunday. And I got DJ Master Tom Hush behind the board here.
I actually go by a different name whenever I am doing a little DJing on the show.
Okay.
And it's very special. It's Luscious Hushes.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
DJ Luscious Hushes. I love it. Yes.
Put respect on the name.
Luscious Hushes. I'm sorry. I didn't. Let me bow down before the crown here. Wow, I had no idea. Represent. Jeez. All right, so Luscious Hushes, you got the beats ready to go. I see you spinning them. You brought your DJ booth and everything. Thanks for doing that, by the way. The laptop's set up. But I wanted to see, we have a whole list of pet peeves. Luscious Hushes, do you have one specifically that you can throw to K.E.N.? And let me point this out. He has not seen any of these pet peeves. He has not seen any of the list. We're just going to give him a little taste of a word or a phrase, and he's going to do a whole freestyle rap from it. Luscious Hushes, what do you got?
All right. The pet peeve is when people take up the whole sidewalk.
Okay.
All right.
I personally do hate this pet peeve as well, so I definitely feel it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I got places that I gotta go. Check the clock, like, why do you have to take up the whole sidewalk? We got things to do, things to move, don't you see? I might have to break down your block like Tetris, thank you, please. Now, I'm just playing, but serious note, like, it's a whole sidewalk on the low. You not that big, you can just move over though. You can get the curve, I just need an inch or so. I got things to do, people to do, and people to see. I got places to go and food to eat. And you wanna be disrespectful to me, like I really don't understand. I don't care if you on a date with your boyfriend or your man, because I really don't got time for this. I mean, just move over. I'ma like, thank you, ma'am, please, cause I said this 3 times, don't you see? And you just gonna turn around and like low-key ignoring me? What does that mean? I don't really understand. I don't. I mean, the sidewalks keep me off the streets, don't you think so? So if you have some decency up in your soul, then you can give me a couple of inches so I can go like a gadget, cause it's really, really tragic. I'm really not trying to turn a savage. I'm just trying to say that I need a little space on the low. I didn't plan it, but you just gotta move. You gotta go.
Oh my gosh.
That was awesome. Way to go, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I hate that personally. Like, it's a big sidewalk. What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, we only got a little bit of space here in the city. Just move along, move along. Luscious Hushes, what were your thoughts, man?
I didn't think it was possible to sum up my frustration and anger at people taking up the whole sidewalk into one freestyle rap. But you did it, man. So I got to give you the props there. Got to give you big props.
Shout out DJ Lucius, Luscious, Luscious, Lucius.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
Luscious Hushes, there we go. That's going to stick with me forever.
Oh, man, we got to take you on the road. That was awesome. All right. Well, we're going to come back with K.E.N. We're going to be diving into a few more pet peeves. If you want to talk to the man himself, trust me, this is like the moment that you're going to see on YouTube videos from years from now. And I love it. So call in 312-981-7200 if you have a pet peeve that you want to hear rapped about. Other than that, we have the news coming up. We got a quick commercial break, and then we're going to take it. So let's go to that commercial break right now here on WGN. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Nick DiGilio. Big shoes to fill. Tom Hush behind the glass. I'm sitting here with K.E.N., killing every note, the God-level GOAT, the hip-hop artist from Chicago, who is making huge waves with his sound and just his extraordinary talent that, truly, if you want to see a great Chicago artist, you got to find this man wherever he may be and check it out. If you want to find me, you can check me out at Facebook at Michael Heidemann, or you can find me on Instagram at Arthur Fonzarelli or Sound Sessions Podcast. Also, I have a website, michaelheidemann.com. But let's get back to the show. Let's get back to what we were doing. K.E.N., you have so much going for you, and you're trying to create the sound, your persona, what you're doing with your music, but you are so much more. I mean, when it comes down to it, your core is there to support people, to support others. What kind of stuff do you do to help your community?
I've been doing community work for a long time growing up. I used to actually volunteer at this organization. It's called the All-Stars Project of Chicago. Shout out to them. We used to curate different open mics and showcases for the kids in impoverished neighborhoods. And, you know, it wouldn't really be based on talent. It wouldn't be based on status. It'd just be based on the fact that you want to come rock a mic, have a good time, and have people cheer for you. I've done that for a number of years. I just recently left the foundation today. It's called the John Walt Foundation. Shout out to them. It's named after a young MC. His name was John Walt. He was taken away from us in 2017, unfortunately. And they do a lot of stuff in order to further his vision of being a musical artist. Today they awarded 5 different artists with $1,000 grants for their art. And, you know, just being a part of the ceremony was super dope, just being in the setting and being around all these talented people. It's super amazing when your music can touch people and you can help out, just even if it's just one person, just based off of something that I love to do for myself. And, you know, just to see that repay back tenfold is great. And I'm also working on this initiative. It's Hush Hush, but I'm working on this initiative to help feed the homeless. Because it's something that's really important to me, being from that struggle and that past. I know what it feels like. I was homeless for 7 years. So it's, you know, I'm working on feeding the homeless and just making sure that I can do my part in trying to help the world.
For real? You were homeless for 7 years?
I was. Back between the ages of like around 7 to 14, 6 to 13, I used to ride the train, CTA train, all night. And just because it was hard, you know, times were hard. I would miss school 3 or 4 times a week sometimes. Eating was really difficult because it just wasn't really a lot of food around. But I always kept a positive spirit. My two brothers, not to get too deep into it, my two brothers are special needs. So I was kind of always the big brother. And I knew that if I wasn't presenting a certain type of confidence and a certain type of faith, then they would have fell off easily as well. So, you know, it was always a struggle. But that's just why I'm here today and why I feel so passionate about music and changing people's lives, because, you know, I understand struggle and I understand how hard it is, and just having something to believe in is important.
Wow, that's an incredible story. I mean, it's so great to see how much you've grown as a person and what those kind of things, going through those struggles in your life, can really push you towards. It's you have the hunger, and you can see that inside of you.
it's incredible to see. And I wanted to know, like, when you were starting out and trying to get your bearings on rap music, I'm sure you were listening to artists like Jay-Z and Kanye and a lot of, you know, great, great musicians from the past and everything. What is it about you, though, and your mind that makes you think a little differently? How do you grasp your vocabulary so eloquently?
So one of my favorite artists growing up was Eminem. And if anybody knows anything about Eminem, he is a wordsmith and he is a tactician of words. And I always really loved reading growing up. Reading was one of my favorite subjects. Back in like fifth grade, I had a competition who could read the most books in a school year. I read 300. And I would have read more, but she capped it off at 300.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just always really, really in love with words. So I used to just read the dictionary and an encyclopedia and it's just the thesaurus all day, like straight front to back. I would just keep a pocket dictionary in my hand, and every day I would try to learn a new word, learn the meaning of it, and then learn five words that was a synonym of that word itself. And it was just like, I just did it every day, but it wasn't work to me. It was just enjoyment, you know? And then, so when I started rapping, I realized that I can say something in four different ways. And if the syllables, because, you know, music is all about syllables when you're writing lyrics, if these syllables don't add up, I know eight different words or 12 different words that say the same exact thing that would fit this bar or fit this quadrant or whatever the case is. That's getting into the deep aspects of music, though.
No, I love it. You've like an English professor's mind, and I really find that very admirable. Are you ready to dive back into the studio, to the scene, and hit it back up with our DJ, our main man?
Yes, yes. Let's get it.
All right. Tom, my man. Are you ready to hit it?
Yeah. Do you want a pet peeve?
Yes, I do want a pet peeve.
All right. Coming to us from the 224, the pet peeve is people who don't use their turn signal.
People who don't use their turn signal. Okay. Hit it, Luscious Hussies.
I have a lot of friends who drive and they are road rage, so this also speaks to me. Yeah, okay, imagine in the car and you kinda in the middle and then you hear a swerve, dang, no turn signal light. I don't understand what is with that though. A quick wave of the hand, we would've been good, my bro. A quick light switch, light check, that would be the right move. You can do that, but instead I gotta fight you. Get up out my car and I don't wanna do that when you could've just did the turn signal. That's the right thing to do, man. But that's okay, I ain't too mad though. But when you cut me off up in a car speeding on the I-94, like, why, yo, I don't really understand. Now you gotta be that type of guy. Like, are you that man? I thought you had a lot of morals to you, bro. But now you just wanna cut me off like scissors, though. And I don't really appreciate that. Like, that's not really cool. It's a bus, no right turns. What are you doing, my dude? Come on, that's not smooth. That is not cool. Now I don't waste my lunch and got juice all over my new shoes. Cause you wanna be that dude and be that way. And now the girl mad at me cause I didn't have a seatbelt on. I hit the windshield. Like, now was by me, please G, don't be that, no way, no more for me, nah, but it's okay, I do understand, I just ask everybody, please use your turn signals, man.
Yeah!
That's a true story, that happened actually, I spilled juice on my new shoes, and that was tragic.
I can see it in your eyes, that probably meant a lot to you, those shoes.
You know, it was Fila's.
Dude, that is incredible, the way that your mind works so fast. And by the way, that whole turn signal thing, I'm sure that Mary Vandervelde in our traffic department, she probably has gone through that same thing many, many times. Heard that from many, many listeners, too. We're having a great time here. This is, again, Michael Heidemann in for Nick DiGiulio. I'm sitting here with K.E.N., the God level goat, killing every note. It's incredible to see the way that you can formulate these words. When you are sitting there and you're thinking about your phrase or what you're going through, because you and I met when I was playing a Beatles song called Don't Let Me Down, and you rapped over it to every single person in the audience. How do you formulate your structure? What goes on in your mind when you're looking out at the crowd and you know what to say?
So the first thing I do is I pinpoint something that I use as a basis. So if a young lady has on a nice dress, then I understand that dress rhymes with so many words. And so from that, I have 7 words, 8 words, 10 words that dress rhymes with. And then I know that there are certain words that might sort of kind of rhyme with. If I say them in a certain fashion, or if I say them fast, so now I got 30 to 35 words. So by the time I get my first sentence out, I have about 50 words that I can rhyme off of that one word. And the second thing is reading the energy of the room. I understand, after years of doing this, how people react to certain things. Mm-hmm. And women love flattering. When you flatter a person, you know, that's the vainness inside of them. They tend to perk up and pay attention more. So it's so easy to now dissect what she's wearing, what color she's, the color scheme, how much seriousness she's put into her outfit. So now that I'm noticing it in the first place, she's instantly hooked. You add the rhyming words at the end and make sure that everything just is just chopped up to the point. You know, it gets easy to this point. You know,
I love it. I love compliments too, by the way. Maybe throw some my way every once in a while.
I got you.
It's great to see you, man. And it's great to hear, you know, just the inner workings of your mind. But while you're here, I think that we need to have at least one more to close us out on before we open up the music vault. DJ Luscious Hushes, can we hear that music, that little bump you got there too? More time.
You want a little of this?
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it.
It gets me in the mood. I paid so much money to go to school to learn how to do that.
Well, man, it works. It works. It sets the stage almost. Well, Luscious Hushes, we need one more pet peeve and one more fat beat for our man, K.E.N., before we close out the night. You got us ready?
Yeah, here's the pet peeve. This is coming to us from the 773. When men don't put down the seat.
Oh.
When you don't put down the seat.
Oh, wow.
On the toilet.
Everyone can relate to that.
Everyone can.
Spin that beat, man.
All right, so I'm going to try to do this one a little different and see if y'all can follow through, follow along with it. Oh no, not again. I can't believe I just fell in the toilet. What are you doing, man? I'm annoyed, man. Like, why do you keep doing this? I don't understand that. What's up, though? Like, put the toilet seat down. That's not that hard, yo. I'm a lady and you're a man. You said you love me, though, so you should put the toilet seat down. That's, like, kind of simple. Nah, you gonna yell at me, though? Like, hey, lady, listen. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know. Like, it's really not that hard. Who sits down without looking, though? Who really just does that without trying to pay attention, yo? She's like, nah, nah, nah. Don't turn this on me. You don't think about nobody but yourself, I see. I come here 3 a.m. I'm tired, though. It's dark. Who about to pay attention to the toilet seat up on the low? Like, I really do not know. We don't even have enough tissue for this on the low, so you have to wipe your nose and wipe it, though. I almost messed up, but that's okay, yo. Just like these ladies, they messed up too, and I don't understand, bro. Like, it's just the toilet seat up on the low. Like, y'all got hands, y'all got a brain, y'all got a mind, y'all just smart, y'all can do that. It's not that hard to rhyme, so you can just try it. Come on, do it with me. Put the toilet seat down real swiftly, and then you sit down, do your business on the low, and everybody can go to sleep and have a good night, yo.
Yes, yes. They said it couldn't be done worldwide. They just didn't believe it, and yet you dropped it down. K.E.N. Tell us where we can find you one more time, because literally everybody, come out and see this performer. He's one of Chicago's best, and I'm so excited that you joined us here at WGN.
You can find me at God Level Goat, GodLevelGoat on Instagram. You can find me at Kennedy on Facebook, and you can also find my music page, K.E.N. If you just search that up, it'll come right up. This is an honor. Shout out to Michael. Shout out to Hushes in the booth, DJ Hushes. Can we get the drop one more time? Can we do that? Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hushes, baby.
Hushes, I love it. Shout out to everybody who's listening, and I'm going to be, you know, in the next position pretty soon. You'll see me on the TV, hopefully really soon.
You're going to do great things, man. I know you are, and I believe in you. So just keep it alive. Keep that fire burning in your belly, and you're going to do great things, and I love it. Again, this is Michael Heideman in for Nick DiGilio. Quick text. It's from the 773. Love the pet peeve raps. Well, 773, we love you. Yes, you know what that means. We're nearing the end of the show. That means we open up our music vault, where we dive into the latest and greatest music topics from around the world. Just wanted to give a quick shout out and a thank you to our man Tom Hush, Vic Vaughn in news, K.E.N., and everybody here who has helped the show move along. Coming up, we got the opening bell with Steve Grzanich and producer
my man, Bennett Wakenight, and of course, the legendary and great man, Steve Cochran, after that. But right now, with the Music Vault, we got to dive into these topics. Tom, do you have a music topic for me?
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That was when Pete McMurray was on, you know, he talked with Rick Nielsen, legendary guitarist of Cheap Trick.
Oh, yeah.
My thing is, you know, they put a lot of different artists all into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Why is there not a Hall of Fame for each individual major genre? Like, there's a Country Music Hall of Fame, which makes sense to me, right?
Very true, yeah.
You go to Nashville, you go to the Country Music Hall of Fame. You know, you go to Cleveland, I guess. Cleveland rocks, I guess. And you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Why is there not, like, maybe there is a Jazz Hall of Fame individually, Hip-Hop Hall of Fame.
A Blues, you know, Hall of Fame should be here in Chicago.
Absolutely. Maybe there is. Maybe I know there's museums of all this kind of stuff, but everybody focuses so heavy on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, trying to stuff as many different types of artists in there as possible. Like, you've got Madonna's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know if I'd call her rock and roll, but she deserves recognition. You've got the guys from NWA in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Janet Jackson.
Yeah. They deserve the recognition, but shouldn't they get their own hall where they can shine a little bit brighter?
Yeah, that's a good point. K.E.N., what do you think about that?
I personally feel like when we look at, like, hip-hop, for example, you know, hip-hop wasn't a genre of music that people wanted pushed at any point in time. They didn't believe in hip-hop. They didn't believe that it had any legs in it. And I feel like when people don't know how to categorize something, they jumble it up into everything else. So if it has the embodiments or even the qualities of one thing, they're going to be like, that's close enough. So
yeah.
When we put Madonna, NWA, you know, in the rock and roll segment, they've transcended what they're doing, but they're also, people don't pay enough attention in order to actually sit and categorize each aspect. Because Madonna is not rock and roll. She's super talented, but she's not rock and roll. But it's so much easier to be like, all right, she's rock and roll for now. You
know? Yeah, yeah. It's just like a drop in the bucket now, as opposed to Tom. I feel like you're got a little bit pet peeve,
a little bit
still about that. It's you're exactly right though. There should be a space where people can go and check out their favorite music. And I mean, if Nashville has like the Country Music Hall of Fame and everything, then there should be like I'd love to think of like a DJ Techno Hall of Fame, like in Switzerland or something like that.
And there's just a big statue of Daft Punk outside, just the two robots chilling out, hanging out.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Actually, I would like to go to that place. Maybe we can invent that together. Okay, number two, living for the gig, going to concerts, get it straight, is good for your health. Did you know this, Tom? By experiencing just 20 minutes of live music, your well-being can increase by 21%. Research from 02 shows a direct link between high levels of well-being with an increase in lifespan of 9 years. We're talking, you go to music, you go to a show every single week, like a few times a month, you can increase your life by 9 years. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. Does that offset the amount of drinking that gets done at these live shows? I'm not saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to the show, have a beer, have a cocktail, whatever. But you meet some people at these shows that are just, they're steaming, you know, they're drinking left and right. And I don't know how much the music is going to offset that, that reduction in lifespan from over drinking.
Wait a minute. I know for a fact that there's a Fish fan who has been to at least 90 plus shows who has lived to 205. I'm just saying. I heard about it. He's in the Field Museum right now.
He's got like a tie-dye on.
He's just permanently stuck in the peace sign with the dreads down to the floor. Well, it's true. How about, you got any more for us, Tom?
I'm trying to think. I've got to say this. So for the Walkman's 40th anniversary, Sony came out with a new version of the Walkman, which is, you know, it's got the nice branding and everything, 40 years of the Walkman. And Sony's been releasing personal music players pretty consistently over the last, like, couple decades.
Yeah.
I mean, since the Walkman, I don't think they've ever stopped making new Walkman, just, you know, their MP3 versions and all that kind of stuff, high-res audio. But I'm really curious as to why we still have personal music players that just play music. Haven't we transcended that? Or should we go back to that so we're spending more time listening specifically just to music, not listening to music and also on Facebook, listening to music and also doing this? Maybe having just a music player is good for your musical education.
You are saying we should go back to the Zune. And you
no,
want to
no, I did not. Do, you do not say that.
It's been quoted.
I'm well, just saying the bringing back just having Walkman, and that's all it does. It just plays music.
I think that's a great idea.
Interesting idea.
Do you remember how revolutionary the iPod was when it first came out, and just having that little rectangle of music, song by song, putting all of your data and all of your music on one device? How amazing that was, and how simple of a time it was.
Because shuffle mode, and like, you didn't know what song was playing next, so it was a little bit of anticipation going.
Yeah. Oh man, the shuffle mode though, and it was so tiny. You could run with it. You could do whatever you want. It was durable. Yeah, it's interesting to think about that, because we've gone so far from that now, and it's I don't know. I think we should bring it back. Just wanted to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. This is, again, Michael Heidemann in for Nick DiGilio. It was a pleasure speaking to you all. You can find me at Facebook at Michael Heidemann, at Arthur Fonzarelli on Instagram. Thank you again to Tom Hush, Vic Vaughn in the news, Dan Long, and Bob for engineering the great show. And, of course, all you wonderful listeners who tuned in, joined the conversation, and made tonight so special. But right now, we're going to take it to news with our man, Vic Vaughn. Thank you very much.